Dear Venerable Sir, Dhamma friends, after this sitting session, we have time allocated for a talk. So I am going to start this Dhamma talk. May everyone prepared for that and give the consent with three times. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Namo tasse bhagavitu arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavitu arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Namo tasse bhagavitu arahato sammā sambuddhasse. Appamādena bhikkave sampādita vaya dhammā saṅkārāti ti. Dear Venerable Sir, Dhamma friends, the topic today I selected was the last word of the Buddha. It's a very firm, famous among the Theravada circles, specifically among the meditators, those who are doing vipassana. Therefore, some meditation masters used to say, this is a kind of a summarized statement of the Buddha, giving the gist of his all 45 years of Dhamma mission. And if everything to reduce to one word, the appamāda is the word it can represent. So appamāda is even among the Buddhist circles, or as a word in Pali language, some languages like Sri Lankan, others some close related with Sinhala, the Pali language, the Sinhala which is more closely related to the Pali, also lost the meaning of the appamāda. It is not being used as a day-to-day term. But luckily or unluckily, the opposite of it, the pamāda, very famous. Everywhere, the term is very quickly used and very famously used. And incidents and experience also available. The pamāda means negligence. Whenever you do something in a neglected manner, it is being recognized as pamāda. The opposite of negligence, the appamāda, is being literally translated as diligence. So therefore, this diligence is the word some masters wish to represent as the most pregnant word, carries the total message of the Buddha or the gist of the Dhamma. So, to give an example, during the colonial time of Sri Lanka, some scholars and interested people came to Sri Lanka and they try different ways and means to convey or convince to Sri Lankan community to their religion with their utmost effort. But people were so consistent with their old system, and the administrators and scholars found very difficult to convince translate people or convince people with the new belief. Ultimately, they found they wanted to know what is the reason behind, why these the tribal groups or Sri Lankan natives are so adhered to their own past, and ultimately they found there's a scripture or sacred writing, and that is what they are abiding. Ultimately, they wanted to know it. They took enough pain to learn the language and get the message. And ultimately, what happened was, they themselves found it very profound and very worth studying. Ultimately, they formed the Pali Tech Society, and for the first time ever, they put everything into the scriptures. And even now, whenever you read Buddhist books, you find their reference to the Pali Text Society books. And after studying and reproducing the books and kind of thing, they were kind of a devoted scholars to the Buddhism, something like Lady Rhys Davies. And ultimately they wanted to reduce it, if possible, to the crux of it or the gist of it. And whenever she was about to write about the basics or the concentrated idea of Buddhism, she, after studying the whole of the scriptures, she says sometimes it appears like Four Noble Truths. And sometimes it appears like cause and effect relationship. And sometimes it is represented as middle path, Eight Noble Path. And sometimes as three disciplines, or moral restraint, concentration restraint, and the wisdom. And sometimes represent as greed, hatred, and delusion. Sometimes it's a training to not to have a absence of greed, absence of hatred, and absence of delusion. And likewise, at many, many facets, and found very difficult to reduce into one single theme or one single concept. So, before the ordination, when I started reading scriptures directly, it was the case in mine also. I asked Venerable Dhammika, I am happy to mention his name here because he was an Australian. And he told all the scholars, international also found, they find reduced to difficult to one single idea or single concept. So after the ordination and after 3-4 years of my seniority, I went to Burma. And there, Pandita Sayadaw, he told, practically, or in the pragmatic sense, or in restraint-wise, the diligence is the single term. You can reduce the whole Dhamma into this particular term. And he tried to give explanation, how can we relate it. And later, for 2-3 years before, when I was in USA, the topic for the series of Dhamma talk was Dasutra Sutta, that you find in the Jiga Nikaya. And that's a kind of a very scholastic effort Venerable Mahasariputta put forth, knowing that in time to come, if there is no grammar, if there is no nice presentation, the Dhamma will be scattered off and ultimately find very difficult to bring into a ship. So this was his first effort, where he tried to tabulate or put into a graph or put into a table Dhamma, so that it's part and partial missing. One can guess according to the related items. So Dasutra Sutta is a graph, it's a table, 10 by 10, and he filled in a very, very unquestionable way what is. And the first question is asked, what is the first thing most helpful for a follower? Katame eko dhammo bahukaro. And then is the person asking the question, and is the person asking, giving the answer also. He says, appamado eko dhammo bahukaro. He says, appamada is the single thing that can give, that will be most helpful for the follower. So, even the Rhys Davids, they used years translating, learning, and try to put into the books and kind of thing. Ultimately, when they are going to reduce to one, they found difficult. But Pandita Sayadaw, maybe with the scriptural understanding, practical and teaching, he says, it is simply diligence. The difference is, if you scholastically, if you try to go, you may find it is difficult to grasp the gist of the idea. It is, scholastically it's very consistent, no problem, but very difficult. But if you try to understand in the pragmatic way, in the practical way, in the sense of restraint, it is not reduced, not difficult to reduce to, and the answer is diligence. So therefore, I have my fair doubt whether we can deal the whole idea or all the content of Appamada, but we'll try our best from the pragmatic point of view, from the restraint point of view, Appamada, with respect to Pamada, the opposite. Opposite is negligence. So therefore, whenever you wanted to be a developed person or creative person, or advancing kind of person, you had to be diligent. It has nothing to emphasize, overemphasize. And whenever you're diligent, even the education system and in the professional system, skills, everywhere, they teach you different systems and different methodologies to make you diligent. But even then what is the difference between this teaching of the Buddha and the other subjects or other skills? Still, I am referring to Pandita Sado. He says, diligence is double-fold. One thing is, that is very common, openly accepted part of the diligence is, to do things diligently is the part we call skillfulness. We call the creativity and productivity. But he says, many do not understand is not to do what you should not do, also you should be diligent. That is the part we have never given any idea, we have never thought about. So, to do and not to do, do's and don'ts. And there are two aspects of a life. Both the parties, both the sides must be fulfilled diligently. In our life, individually or as a group, we can reflect back and see how much we have been diligent to what we should do. And still our wishes, our wish being not fulfilled because something is lacking. So attention must be directed to be diligent, not to do what you should not do. That is the part Buddha presented in the three ways, three restraint, moral restraint, concentration restraint, and wisdom restraint. So whenever someone is specializing and recommending and analyzing the restraint, many consider it as a regimentation and disciplinarian and kind of a iron fist to control the people. So therefore, naturally, our mind not happy with, but instead, the mind is trying to get the maximum happiness or pleasure by doing things diligently, what you should do. But still, you won't get contented unless otherwise you introduce to be diligent what to do, what you should not do. Not to do what you should not do. So that may be the part we do in this meditation as such, or what is the part the mindfulness is going to give, the emphasis. So that is the what I thought of discussing in this talk. So that itself is in three types. So that means three restraints. The first and foremost thing is the moral restraint. The moral restraint is very easy to understand and therefore good to start with. That indicates the physically and verbally, these things are immoral. And whenever you do it, you transgress the social norms. So therefore, it has been recognized as transgressional kind of defilements, very gross. And therefore, when and where you think about the morality or ethical values, they are each and everyone in a society must abide by this ethical or moral responsibilities. According to the Buddhist scripture, it says killing of a living being is not a good thing. It is you must not do. So therefore, when and where this issue happens, you must be very diligent, not due to the fear of hell, not due to the fear of omnipotent, omnipresent external person, but you as a living being. If you are not happy with someone is coming and killing or hurting you, that must be the same privilege of another being. So you being another equal kind of a living person or living being, you have no rights. And if you are going to do it, you have to suffer a lot. So therefore, that very simple reasoning itself, one can understand, one must be not negligent about that part, and you must diligently understand killing is bad thing. And in a misappropriation or robbing of others' properties, it's no good because you love your things. When someone is looting or taking away, are going to give a lot of unhappiness, fear. So therefore, you must understand each and every person, earn their things with their effort, so they love them. So therefore, you have no chance to misappropriate. And then you are creating a fear by not protecting others' properties as such. So therefore, don't misappropriate or you take it. So this is the way you verify the moral restraint and the sexual misconduct. Don't interfere to the others' things, and each and the as far as the sexual activities are concerned, it must be under a certain ethical rules. And whenever you are transgressing, it's creating so much of unexpressed kind of suffering. So you must restrain it. And they are, whatever the, your diligence is outside, if you are negligent in this sense, so you have to expect suffering, expect bad consequences. So therefore, these things are called physical, transgressional defilements, and other things, other part is the verbal, lying, slandering, harsh words, and tail carrying. So these are the thing happens. So whenever it happens, specifically the today's world, that is with full technology or IT technology, the worst time of the human history, lie. So much of lie. Whatever the media, whatever the political sides are there, they do that kind of thing and harsh words and tail carrying. Ultimately, even if you get your basic needs due to this kind of miscommunication and wrong information and twisted truth, so much of suffering happens. So you must restrain it diligently, and whenever you abide by it, you are giving a kind of a security to the society by not killing, not stealing, not have sexual misconduct and no verbal misdeeds. So that is how you can protect others, or you can give the security to the others, and that is the way you get the protection. So it says if you abide by this moral restraint, or if you diligent to have your standard, you give the protection to the society so that you will in return get the protection. That is called Dhammo Havi Rakhati Dhammachari. As far as you are diligent to take care about the others' rights, your rights will be, your protection will be assured. So it is the way the social harmony can happen. So it is very interesting and very important how much individual can contribute towards the diligence or not to do. No, you should not do in a society wherever you go, and that is the kind of a culture, human culture or gentlemanship. That's the way you must teach your children, and that's the way you must abide in by. That's the main, first and foremost part the Buddha is prescribing. So each and everyone, whenever you are in the society, whenever you are in society at large, always be diligent not to do what you should not do. So when I come to this society, we must abide by rules and regulations. When I come to Australia, yeah. When I go to whatever the country or back in Sri Lanka, there are some social norms you have to abide by. So it is a diligence. So therefore it is not about your enlightenment or emancipation, but to have the social harmony, and that is in each and everyone's responsibility. So not someone come and impose upon you or punishing upon you. The Buddha says the kamma and kamma theory, good begets good and the bad begets bad, is the governing rule for this diligence pertaining to the social norms. So if someone is living by it, you come to a least frictional path or to a comfort zone, that is how you make little space in your mind, or your mind will be more inwardly. Otherwise, it is creating so much of problems. So, avipatisarathaya ananda kusalani silani, the Buddha says to Venerable Ananda, as far as you are skillful in this transgressional kind of, or not to do transgressional kind of things, your mind is serene naturally, because it's creating peace and you feel security and you will not be a threat to another person. So that is the basic starting balance for the concentration meditation. What you do in the concentration meditation as such, when compared to this moral restraint, concentration restraint means you physically withdraw yourself for a limited time for your concentration training, we call solitude. Whenever you go into a forest or sit under a tree or come to a place like this, what you do is not only withdrawing from the physical bad thing or physical misdeeds or verbal misdeed, you try to do away any kind of physical movements, intentional or conscious, and any kind of talking, any kind of conscious engagement with the conversation. You try to keep the body without physical actions and the verbal action, and try to understand under such circumstances what happened in your mind. That is what we do in walking, sitting meditation. You give a certain amount of time and determine not to move your body consciously, and determine not to talk, and try to see what is happening. When it's happening, when such a even given, you can understand even you are not committing a bad thing physically or verbally, the memory of the bad things you have done, it is repetitively come into your mind. That is what you call hindrances. And go to the Buddhist scriptures, there are 5 hindrances. Even though you are not committing at that moment, they appear like perceptions. So when that happens, or when you are face to face with it, you understand, even though you are restrained physically and verbally, the mind is utterly undisciplined. It is utterly unethical. It's always never happy to be with the present moment where you are not committing anything physically and verbally, but mind under such circumstances try to see, live in the past where you are quite acquainted with these bad things or transgressed mental state, or you may future planning, projections, excitements, or you think about other person or other place. So mind is ever creating so much of a turmoil. You have given completely conducive conditions physically and verbally and ask mind to be withdraw back to a observer's position. Never. You can understand whatever the situation given, mind is not happy without a stress. It's never happy without defilements. It's never happy with even at least a perception of defilement. So ultimately what happened is, if you are not restraining yourself, if you are not well instructed yourself, if you are not prepared yourself, you consider this as my fault, consider personalizing, or you personalize outside someone. So that is the point, the concentration restraint. And they are, just by sitting and closing your eyes, thing will not happen. You have to share it with, to communicate with others, and you have to refine your instructions and do it again and again, and basically consider this is not my mistake, it's a human mind. So therefore, give more and more chances mind to be free from Then there are physical misdeeds and the verbal misdeeds, and try to be in the present moment and consider the diligence here is not to remember past and worry, not to project future and worry, not to think about other person and worry, not to think about other places and worry. Instead, abide by the present moment. You must be diligent. But you can see how much mind is crafty, how much it is going everywhere, and can you sympathetically observe the nature of the unrestrained mind? Or mind with so much of bad habits, and instead the Buddha, after knowing about this monkey mind, the Buddha mentioned, try to apply the mind again and again to a physicality which can be verified, cross. And more you apply mind to a one particular non-reference point or to a non-benchmark, so much so, not only mind is free from physical and verbal misdeeds, account balance, but no even the perception of the of tension, frustration, and the absent-mindedness or wandering mind, you can be with that particular primary object or reference point related to how much time you take, how much time you apply again and again to the same object. That is what we call the concentration meditation. And we, instead of let the monkey mind to run away, past, future, other people and other places, try to apply to one single point. So when and where that is being achieved, we call one-pointedness or calm and collected mind. And there you can see not the physical and verbal restraint, but now mind also temporarily, due to your repetitive application of the mind, mind also temporarily you can keep it in the present moment. Diligent. a higher level of diligence you never can achieve through moral restraint. You have to have special kind of effort, special kind of instruction, special kind of application skillfulness. Then some people find it is possible. That is what you call the diligence at the concentration level. And you see, when and where you are not diligent, mind is negligent, that is the nature. Here, instead of diligence, another term, the Buddha use it in a technical way, satya or mindfulness. So commentators as well as the late teachers, they found the diligence and the mindfulness are synonyms at this level. Even in the moral level, you can see relationships. But here, the mindfulness can replace the diligence and they become synonyms. And nowadays, due to this stress or frustration or this pollution, they are using heavily this term mindfulness instead of diligence. So therefore, not like the last decade, not like the one before the last decade. Now, since the mindfulness is a famous subject, we are a little bit aware. And sometimes people replace the mindfulness with the awareness also, as we discussed in the afternoon. So therefore, mindfulness became a very, very used or commonly used word today. So therefore, diligent, that is not to do bad thing, is become mindfulness. And mindfulness is keep the mind occupied here and now. So ultimately, that became not only the moral concentration restraint, it can go further. That means even though temporarily you can restrain mind to a certain extent of time to keep in the present moment, its underlying tendencies that direct the dispositions are about to take up a hand, take the helm, when and where this diligence is not there. That means when and where the negligence is there, when and where you are not mindful. So you have to understand that even though you take care about the transgressional kind of defilement, even though you are temporarily can take care about this obsessional kind of defilements, there is a kind of a layer underneath, below the carpet, under the carpet, that direct disposition. So sleeping kind of a defilements, and that is the part we call wisdom training. And wisdom training is completely behind the screen. So therefore, whenever you are living a social life, even though you are successful, you will not understand what are the type of tendencies, what are the type of dispositions you carry. You call this myself or my personality or my likings and disliking. Moment you try to understand, they all appear like very positive things, but never contribute you towards your well-being. So therefore, you have to look at them, you have to isolate them, you have to delimit them from the transgressional kind of defilement, the obsessional, and take it under the light of mindfulness. Then only you can see the perversions, the cheating nature, misrepresenting. And therefore, even though you find the media is twisting the truth, even if you find the politicians are very skillful in twisting, your mind is the most tricky thing and most perverted thing. And as far as you do not know, as far as you don't understand the danger, you maybe stop your restraint at the moral level and the concentration level. But underneath, there's a huge area you have to look into, but you are not qualified. Because your mind is obsessed with this obsessional kind of defilements and the transgressional kind maybe, So once these two become fairly skillful, then you can understand there's still a task, or you have to be diligent towards wisdom training. You have to be mindful under the carpet dust, and that is a demanding job. That means after you train yourself to take the mind or calm the mind and make it serene under the concentration training, and don't be happy and contented, observe it for longer time, that concentration training is not lasting. It comes and goes, and after going there, immediately sometimes you can see your disposition, so your underlying tendencies, unless otherwise you look at them from the direct or correct perspectives, you yourself will understand they as beneficial. You never understand its perverted nature. So they are not only your exposure to the situation, you not only your moral and physical concentration restraint, not only your theoretical understanding, your preparedness, that's your correct view or correct mindset, is very important. So therefore, understanding and training on this wisdom restraint, is called something electric, something unpredictable. So therefore, it is utterly a trial and error. Even if you are successful in moral restraint and the concentration restraint, or that means if you are morally diligent and the concentration-wise diligent, there's another kind of, another type of diligence, another kind of mindfulness you need for this wisdom training. And for that, your association with noble friends and association with good Dhamma and association with this correct perspective and your trial and error is quite important. So therefore, it appears like painfully slow. Understanding and going to the subject is painfully slow. If I am to get an example from our today's discussion, when and where we try to keep the mind concentrated or one-pointed or serene, we are associating one particular object. So, I take the example of this in-breath and out-breath. It is not the only one, this is just an example. Whenever you try to keep mind with the in-breath and out-breath, whenever you are successful, that means to see consecutively you can see 10 rounds and 15 rounds of in-breath and out-breath, you can see then and there the mind is well restrained and mind is free of suffering or frustration or burning or torturing. But without any previous sign, it jump again to the maybe a thought or maybe a sound or maybe a pain. Whenever it goes there, even though they are creating suffering, even though your breath is a least frictional path, mind is going there and taken for a ride. After a long while only you comes to know the mind is not in the secure place, not in the assigned place, and therefore it's natural for you to get desperate and natural for you to regret it. So much so, you fail to understand how the mind come again back to your primary object if you keep on practice. So someone has to direct it. Someone has to tell, okay, it is going out is not your own mistake. It's a common mistake. It is happening because you introduce and restrain. That is why going out happens. But if you are not restraining, going out is nothing at the day-to-day activities because mind is always absent-minded. Mind is always unmindful. Mind is always negligent. So it is not a mistake. Now you try to restrain or you try to keep it here. Now you have a secure place. Now we have an assigned place. So then going out is bad, yes. But what about coming back to the subject? What about the coming back to the primary object? Have you ever appreciated it? Have you observed it? Have you ever aware of it? No. Because your mind is so colored of the regret. So therefore, keeping the mind and using the mind with the applying thoughts and try to be face to face with the primary object is a kind of a mindfulness, yes. But all of a sudden it goes. But imagine whenever it goes without regretting, without getting agitated, just observe how quickly you can bring it back to your primary object, because primary object is your second nature. You can bring it. When you are bringing back, if the primary object is agitated, does primary object reject the returning mind? What does block return journey? Nothing. So moment you understand it, you see that kind of a mindfulness is called power of mindfulness by Venerable Mahasariputta. He says, Pamade na kampatiti sati balang. Even though mind is negligent, that means going away from your secured place, oasis, or the your assigned place, if you train yourself not to regret and just see how quickly, how efficiently you can bring it back to the primary object, that is called, main thing is not to worry. That kind of training is called wisdom training. And not the, if you take any academic institute like university or postgraduate or whatever may be, your diploma, have you seen ever any course or any diploma on training, that kind of thing? Never. You go to university, you be so much of departments. You must have heads of department, subject matter specialist, all those things. They all teach you how to worry when the mind goes astray. But not a single person is telling you, not a single person is aware. That's the secret of your life. It has its tendency to go out, never mind. But you have your capacity to bring it back. What is the blocking factor is your own regret. Without regretting, if you think about your efficiency, your ways and means almost equal with Buddha. That is the nature, you have to appreciate it. You have the Buddha nature, you have the ways and means. Two people, if you compare, no difference. If he or she knows that I am in a wrong place, and that became wrong place because of my training on concentration, and I am successful, but for the moment, it's carried away, taken for a ride. Never mind. Now I know the disease. The answer is, going back to it, and what is the ways and means the mind to go back? And no one has to teach you. As far as you know, this is to be done. But you never naturally take this as your own challenge. Buddha is pinpointing and say, once you become fairly successful in moral restraint, and successful fairly on the concentration restraint, still you find frustration, still you find burning situation, still you find torturing situation. And they are, let it happen, let it burn you, let it torture you. And understand, when and we are under that torturing situation, burning situation, frustrated situation, compare it without much carried away by this disappointment, how quickly I can go back home. And if whenever you become successful and come back home and see, okay, if I am to worry, I will be worrying outside, insecure place. Instead, main thing is not to worry. Think about coming back. When you come back, you see, again you can start the meditation like a beginner. And there you find you are a new person. You are rejuvenated. And main task or main training must be, let that happen again and again, bring the mind again back to the secured place again and again, and never it will be a failure. Each and every time you do it, you think, you understand experience, If your perspectives are correct, nothing blocking. Anytime you can come back, each time you come back, you are the winner. It's a win-win situation. So ultimately, it will not restrain to sitting position. You may see that can happen in walking meditation. That can happen in day-to-day activities inside the meditation center. Or that can happen back at home. Or back in the multitasking situation. It's nature. It's natural mind to jump out. But instead of worrying, and that worry is the one Buddha is called as defilement. Instead of worrying, what about finding the ways and means to come back? And then you see the Buddha is just smiling and waiting there. Ultimately, more and more you to do, you understand the human suffering, you understand the human mind, and you understand how much gradually and in a systematic way you have to introduce this diligence and with respect to the negligence, and how much you must be alert, how much you must be vigilant, how much you must be mindful, and take your own mistakes as a guiding line, but exactly understand what to do, what must be your preparedness, what must be your the correct view. Yeah, it must be your correct perspective. And for that, your natural selection or normal evolution never pinpoint this point unless otherwise outsider can come and help you. For that also, you must present your question in a very specific way. And beating on bush, you will never communicate. All the communication system outside is simply beat on bush and they never go into the subject. So therefore we have to discuss, we have to listen, we have to practice, we have to do mistakes and we have to think cordially when we are discussing and when and where the instruction happen, you find more and more you apply, it is you are refining, reconfirmation the same and ultimately you find sir. It's a kind of a key for the human mind, but as far as you are extrovert, you will that presentation and your communication will also will not be adverted into the situation. And if you not tap into the real door, answer also will not happen. So when it happens and when it is coining, it's ever it is happening in an electric way, unpredicted way. So therefore, whatever you learn, whatever you experience, is not something copied from outside. It is not borrowed from outside. It is not purchased from outside, your own way. So therefore, each time you advance in this wisdom training, you feel like everything is within now. Of course, the instruction came from outside, but your selection of that instruction, natural selection, it's a real electric thing. So ultimately what happens is you feel like sharing with others because you see other people are generally good, morally also good sometimes, concentration-wise also good, but exactly in the same burning nature, exactly in the same torturing nature. They are spiritual beings. They think that I deserve to have kind of a peace, but not because they are wisdom training, lacking. So therefore, whenever it happens, these prepared people can easily understand, discern the value of this instruction and value of this self-contentment. I must understand the instruction. I must be prepared. I must have the correct perspective. But I have to do it and I have to experience it. More and more experiencing, you feel the real electric nature or impromptu nature. And that is the way the Dhamma become or the truth become very lively or living Dhamma. And ultimately you feel like sharing with others. So this is the sharing the Buddha tried for 45 years. And even though he tried his best, you can see in the human history for the last 1,000 or 1,500 years, it has been ultimately gone, covered and not prominent enough. Now, anyway, for the 30, 40 years, again this is coming as the insight meditation or wisdom training or sometimes as mindfulness. So, whenever it is happening, it is a good era or it's a good constellation. We are lucky enough exposure. But all the people fairly engage in this, they find it is very difficult to give it to each and every person. It's there. Some people are very sharp in pick them. They understand this is the gist. But many do not understand because they are not mature enough. They are not morally sound enough. They are not concentrated enough. And they don't understand the gravity of the problem. So they never believe the answer is relying on the such a simple thing, simple tactic. So therefore, even the mindfulness experiment in neuroscientists and all the kind of thing, each and every scientist, they understand everyone won't accept it in the equal way. So therefore, don't try to expect in a society at large. So always addressing, always appealing to a very little fraction of the population. And when and where you tap on that, you see then and there you can find not only the security on the moral level, not into the security in the concentration level, even in the wisdom level. And you find that whenever you know, whenever you are prepared and the mind is with the correct view, it is beyond time and space, so always waiting till you come. So therefore, not only you have to understand first and get the gist of it, on the glimpse of it, and later adjust your way of living so that you will be frequenting it. And ultimately, you have to share with your dear and near ones. With each and everyone is happy with that, but they don't know how to open the door. They do not have the key, and they try to find quicker ways or accelerated ways and shortcuts. So much so they miss the bus. So therefore, first and foremost, you have to be a good example and try. And then whenever possible, whenever the people are mature enough, don't hesitate, just give them. And you never believe the kind of people, those who are picking them. It's not always Buddhists. Buddhists find it is very difficult because they are in a kind of a blinkers. So for the last 1 year or so, I try my best to deal with children. You won't believe that the way they catch it, they are so quick. But you have to tell them very sharply, don't believe them, they're younger than you. They are much, much elder than you. You have to address them in the sharp way and they will understand. And there are some programs giving it to the criminals back in the prisons. They understand. And I hope if we can get to the asylums also, they also sometimes may understand because they know most of the mad people are outside. They are very sharp fellows. The present day laws and everything is putting all the people into the jail, and the person deciding or passing the judgment is more criminal than the person receiving it. And it is very obvious when you go to the prisons, when you go to the asylum. So therefore, don't think that you have any authority. You have any governing powers on this, because mindfulness is such a thing, you can't block someone's. And it is not under anyone's control. But the thing is, your mind must be mature enough, must have the correct view, broader view, And you must understand this gravity of this samsaric suffering and how much you inflict yourself due to your ignorance and attribute to others and so much of miscommunication. According to the Buddhist circles, you are accumulating so much of bad karma due to your misattribution, wrong understanding. So whenever you are meditating, not only you become mindful, you will only mind your own business and try to understand the thing through the Dhamma. And it's a blessing to have association with the true person, association with the noble person, and be with Dhamma rather than going by this pressure principle. Even the politicians are prescribing it. Even the economists are prescribing it. Even the so-called socialists are prescribing it. Even the you people prescribing for your children. That will not be the lasting answer. So therefore, verify yourself and then try to share it with, but not with the old people, but the people prepared for that. So therefore, diligence is the same verbal mean, the word meaning like mindfulness and awareness, and when it is a birthright, it's nothing to learn. Only thing is, instead of diligence, mindfulness, you specialized other mental concomitants, so the diligence and mindfulness become shy and backward. When and where you give a fair chance, they will take the helm and they will lead you. So that is what I thought sharing with this in this evening. So with reminding you, diligence and mindfulness is nothing to learn. It's a birthright being human, and always try to understand the questions or any problems or any this thing happen through this mindfulness. For that, the choiceless awareness, because your existing values, likings and disliking, may be wrong. Who knows? But if you give a fresh approach with the choicelessness, that's another coined word for this mindfulness. You may find a new way of looking at the problems and your fellow beings. And definitely, I hope it will give a fresh approach to your life and fresh approach to the world. And you will be having lesser friction, lesser frustration, lesser burning, and lesser kind of torturing. May you all happy, be healthy and wealthy, be mindful. And last but not the least, be the mindful as well as be mind your own business. With that remark, I would like to sum up the talk today. Thank you very much for listening. So that is the end of the program today.